Chapter 33 Sunday, 6:18 p.m. Lucy's pulse hammered a jungle rhythm. She scuffed her shoes along the floor, kicking away any snakes that crossed her path until she reached the metal pole. At its base lay a thick, vinyl-coated cable ending in a padlock. He kept her here, with all these snakes. She swallowed. It was hard work with her throat closed tight against the stench of decomp. Talk about a living hell. She squatted, examining the cable and the overturned bucket without touching them. Why would Fletcher torture Ashley like that when he kept saying he wanted to save her? Stretching her jaw, she popped her ears and thought hard. Was she wrong in her profile of Fletcher? Was he really just another sick sadist like Ivan, the Canadian? Or that other lover of snakes, Pastor Walter? The padlock was closed, attached to a piece of metal that had once clamped a loop of cable. It was the cable itself that was cut. Fletcher wouldn't need to do that. He'd have the key. Unless someone else had rescued Ashley? No. They would have triggered Fletcher's traps. It had to be Fletcher playing at being Ashley's knight in shining armor, subjecting her to torture, then swooping in for the rescue. Just like his father. If so, then not only was Ashley still alive, she'd be indebted to him, ready to do anything he asked. Ah, hell. She did not like where this was heading. She stood, swept the area with her light, and saw the outline of a portable commode to one side, and layers of hay bales arranged like steps on the other. Strange shapes reflected the high-powered beam of light, dark yet shiny. Carefully, she approached the large objects. The smell of decomp was stronger here, strong enough to gag her. Wrapped in sheets of clear plastic like mummies, sitting side by side on the hay bales as if they were spectators at a Steelers game, were two women and a man. Their mouths gaped open in death grins. Their eyes bulged out, and they had a front-row seat to Ashley Yeager's suffering. Puddles of body fluids covered their feet, but the plastic kept it contained. No flies or insects had penetrated the coverings. The decomposition had come from their own body's bacteria, eventually bloating their abdomens with gas until the intestines and skin ruptured. Thank God they were fully clothed, sparing Lucy that sight. She backed away, retracing her steps until finally she stood outside once more. Night had fallen quickly. It was now as dark outside as it had been inside the barn. Walden waited at the blazer, standing at the bumper, jogging forward as soon as she left the barn.
"You okay?"
"Boy, are you glad I outrank you," she said, drinking the cool, crisp air as if she'd been holding her breath for too long. "Not far from the truth. How do you feel about snakes?" He looked at her sharply.
"Hate 'em."
"I used to not mind them." She leaned against the car door, trying to hide the sudden wobble in her legs. "Even played with them when I was a kid." She shook her head and glanced back at the barn, now just a pale blob shadowed against the trees beyond.
"Not anymore." "What the hell happened in there?"
It didn't take long for the pristine and silent farm to morph into a cacophony of light and noise. The area was taped off, everyone held back while the EOD guys walked their bomb-sniffing dogs around first the barn, then the house. The dogs alerted at both sites, which meant more men and equipment and lights and crackling radios. Ribald jokes as two bomb squad members squeezed into their bulky suits, followed by several turf battles that Lucy was forced to referee. ERT wanted to photograph the barn crime scene prior to the EOD squad searching for bombs, just in case. EOD wanted to get the hell in and out again before the heat made them pass out while confined to the self-contained suits that weighed 80-some pounds and reached temperatures of over 100 degrees when sealed. The ME wanted no one to touch anything until they got to the bodies, which may or may not be sitting on top of a bomb. The Stadies groused against the inclusion of any Allegheny County's bomb squad since, apparently, the Moore homestead was just over the Butler County line, making it their jurisdiction. They kept insisting that they could have flown their EOD team in from Harrisburg if they'd been given enough advance notice. Like Lucy had begun her day planning to find a few homemade incendiary devices. Grimwald showed up, trying to spin doctor the fact that Fletcher was a bad guy and in his direct chain of command. Local police and fire turned out in force, acting like it was a fall carnival, wandering over the scene, taking photos with their camera phones. Then, just when things were starting to get under control, the media flocked to the site like carrion eaters to roadkill. Until the Stadies finally had them corralled behind the perimeter, they plowed past crime scene tape, stomped through the woods, blinded hard-working cops with their spotlights, and interrupted every conversation with inane questions bellowed in self-righteous voices. "Agent Guardino, did you see Ashley Yeager? Is it true the perpetrators turned her into a mummy? Agent Guardino, is it true a rattlesnake bit you when you rushed in to save the girl? Agent Guardino, how does it feel to be a woman working with all these men?" The last was especially a puzzle, seeing as it came from the only female reporter present, not Cindy Ames, thank God, and since there were three other females working the scene in addition to Lucy. She shielded her face from the camera flashes, rustled up reps from ERT, EOD, and the ME, and shepherded them to the relative peace of the Mobile Evidence Recovery Unit, a large black RV parked in the field beside the lane. "Anyone got an Advil?" she asked, massaging her jaw joints, feeling them crackle and pop. Never mind her shoulder. It was frozen in place, pain using it as its own command center, hurling new waves of agony whenever she dared to forget about it. Or six or seven? The ERT squad leader, a guy named Jimenez, found her a sample pack containing two Aleve. Lucy dry swallowed them and spread out a rough sketch of the property on the counter. The three men clustered around her, jostling racks of CSI paraphernalia. "Okay, here's where the dog alerted, right?" She pointed to both doors of the house and the rear of the barn.
Definite on the house," Donahue, the EOD tech, confirmed. He was wearing the bulky pants of his bomb suit, held up by wide suspenders over a plain white t-shirt.
"The barn, she was a bit vague. Definitely explosives there, but either they're spread out over a fairly wide area, or maybe they were moved several times, leaving residue behind.
Could the smell of decomp have thrown her off?"
"Curtis," the ME guy asked. Donahue shook his head.
"No way. Cookie's the best at what she does. The decomp disturbed her a little, but as soon as she focused, she was good to go."
"Here's my problem, gentlemen," Lucy redirected their attention. "I have no evidence to help me save a young girl's life except what is in this barn and maybe in the house. What's the best way to maximize evidence collection and minimize the danger to our people?"
"I could go in and photograph, video the interior of the barn since we have an entry there,"
Jimenez volunteered.
"Maybe even collect the items in the center of the barn."
"But she's going to get most of her evidence from the bodies," Curtis argued. "And the bodies are sitting right where the dog said there were explosives."
"That might be why Cookie alerted to such a large area," Donahue said. "If he had the explosive sitting near the bodies, then moved the bodies to booby-trap them and finally return them to that location."
"So the bodies are probably rigged." Lucy gnawed the inside of her cheek. "Donahue, could you start your guys working on the two IEDs at the house while we document and collect evidence from the front of the barn? We won't disturb the bodies. Only photograph them in situ."
Donahue frowned, his two shaggy eyebrows meeting in the middle of his forehead. Obviously a by-the-book kind of guy, which probably explained why he still had all his fingers and toes. By the book was not a bad thing when you dealt with unstable explosives on a daily basis.
"If time is that vital, yeah, we could go that route," he finally conceded. "But I want one of my guys with them, make sure they don't touch the wrong thing."
"Sounds like a plan. Let's get to work. I need to see the photos of the bodies ASAP. I might have an idea on one of them. It had been too dark in the barn for her to tell for sure, but she had a sinking feeling that one of the women was Vera Saceres, which meant Lucy's promise to her that the bad part was over had been a big fat lie. On that less than cheerful note, she waved them on their way. The EOD guys had what looked like a miniature cement mixer on wheels, their explosive containment device. They also had a neat-looking robot she knew that they were just itching to play with once they made sure the windows were safe to breach and they could maneuver it inside the house. Jimenez and his crew were busy dragging lighting equipment to supplement their camera flashes. Curtis trudged behind them, carrying only two cameras and looking disgruntled that he was going to have to let the EOD guys touch his bodies before he did. Medical examiners got that way, very territorial. Nobody touched their bodies unless they said so, and usually they didn't. You told them what you needed, an ID from a victim's wallet, the cell phone shoved into their pocket, the locket with the perpetrator's fingerprints on it. They would fastidiously document it, remove it, and allow you to examine it. But the bodies were their domain. Speaking of guarding their domain, behind her she could hear Grimwald barking at Walden. She turned to intervene, but her cell rang. Guardino.
Hey, it's Burroughs. I've a situation here.
I kind of have my hands full myself, she replied, wondering what kind of trouble the detective could have gotten himself into. She pretty much sidelined him, diplomatically, of course. Where's here?
Three Rivers Medical Center.
Lucy's breath caught, a tight knot of fear that seized her chest and wouldn't let go. What happened? Is Megan... Her voice broke. She turned away from the scattered clusters of law enforcement, hunched her shoulders as she pinched the bridge of her nose, willing back tears.
No, shit, I'm sorry. She's fine. Megan's fine.
Burroughs' voice finally broke through the vise grip of terror that held her hostage.
No, that's not it. I'm here with Cindy Ames.
Able to fill her lungs again, Lucy straightened, hand clenched around her phone, wringing the life from it and wishing it was Burroughs's neck. Or better yet, a certain TV reporter's.
Surely I misheard you, Detective Burroughs.
Look, don't get like that. It's not my fault. His voice dropped, became rushed, earnest. I'm trying to help you out here. Would you at least give me a chance?
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Cindy and her cameraman were at your house this morning. Shot some film of it, and your husband and daughter going to church. The ambulance coming.
You've got to be kidding me. That bitch. Endangering an undercover federal agent's identity is a felony. Go ahead, take her into custody. I warned her. Did she think I was playing?
All Cindy ever thinks about is the story. And she got one. She also has pictures taken with camera phones of you in the ER this morning, and eyewitness accounts of how you terrorized the hospital.
I did no such thing.
All I can say is, it looks bad. Real bad. Anyway, I was thinking we could maybe make a deal with her. Instead of arresting her, maybe we can get her to lose the story in exchange for a bigger one. A better one. He paused. One that might help us nail Fletcher.
What did you have in mind?
We let her air an interview with Fletcher's mom. One that implies that you're considering arresting the old lady as an accessory or something nasty like that. Something bad enough to draw Fletcher back to town. You said he was obsessed with his mom. We'll give him a chance to play hero.
Just like his father. She considered it. It will take some finessing. No way Alicia Fletcher will cooperate.
Cindy says she won't have to. Her computer guys can digitally edit things so we can make her say almost anything we want. And most of it will be in the way Cindy sells it on air.
Start working on a script. I'm on my way.